Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Chris Mancini.
Good day. Glad to be here.
Thank you for being here with a fresh new hip.
Yes, indeed. Titanium.
I hope you didn't.
So I feel like if I activated it, then as I only have one, I would like run in a circle if it's bionic. So
nice. You're bulletproof, nothing to lose.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the tech news. Here we go. In 3, 2. This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you listening right now. Thanks to every single one of you. Pele Glendale, Dr. X17, Adam Green, and Mark Olson. On this episode of DTNS, Unity backtracks on developer fees, but how far? We don't know yet. iOS 17 is here, and it means apps can read you the weather in your own voice. Do you want that? Plus, Chris Mancini talks about how crowdfunding has changed over the years. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, September 18th, 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
Deep in the heart of Texas, I'm Justin Robert Young.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us, writer-podcaster Chris Mancini. Welcome back to Daily Tech News Show, Chris.
Thanks. Great to be here. You know, never run out of tech things to talk about, apparently.
No, every time
there's
I think we're going to be...
something new.
Yeah, every time I think we're going to cancel the show, we just there's more.
Yeah.
Turns out. That is one of the weird things of doing this show for almost 10 years now, is that I always have more things than I can fit in a show that I want to talk about. And you think that I would have gotten more jaded than that by now.
Yeah. Nope. You're just another earnings report. Yep. Bring it on.
No earnings reports today, though, folks.
No.
Let's find out what is in the quick hits. Intel continues to grow its business as a foundry that will make chips for anybody. You can pay them, they'll make a chip for you. And in pursuit of that goal, it's promoting its development of glass as a substrate for chips. Now, glass is brittle. It's a little harder to work with, but Intel thinks they've figured it out. And the benefit is that glass can tolerate higher temperatures, resist warping, and allow for some more precise lithography. You can put more chiplets on it without the instability of silicon. That gives you some more flexibility in design. Intel says its glass substrate can increase interconnect density by 10 with higher yields. The glass substrate announcement comes with a side of ramping up on packaging of chips at U.S. foundries. That's something TSMC has had trouble with. It still sends its chips from its Arizona plants to Taiwan for packaging.
Amazon will hold a device and services event Wednesday, September 20th at its campus near Washington, D.C. It will not be streamed, so this is strictly for attending press. Bloomberg notes that it will also be Amazon executive Dave Limp's sign-off. As Amazon continues to cut development money from products like the Echo, Limp told employees last month that he will be leaving the company before the end of the year. And we think we know who's going to replace him, Tom.
Yeah, we do. There's actually lots of Microsoft news to throw your way today. But the big one is that Chief Product Officer and Windows lead Panos Panay announced he's leaving Microsoft 3 days before this Thursday's September 21st Microsoft Hardware and AI event. So we have Amazon on the 20th. We have Microsoft on the 21st. Microsoft told The Verge that Panay will not appear at that event, despite Panay posting last month that he was excited to be there. Youssef Mehdi will take over Windows and Surface. And Bloomberg reports that Panay is headed to Amazon to take over its smart device division from Limp. So, you know, echoes and speakers and displays and all that. I'm very curious if we'll see Panay at Amazon's September 20th event.
What was the pitch there? It's like, what was the pitch there? We're going to gut this department, now come in and run it.
Yeah, we gutted it, Limp's out.
Yeah.
But hey, maybe you can do something with what's left.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. In other Microsoft news, researchers at security company Wiz notified Microsoft June 22nd that a shared access signature token, an SAS token for a GitHub repository, was overly permissive. It turns out with a little persuasion, you can get it to do whatever you want, include expose internal data. Microsoft revoked the token June 24th. No customer data was exposed. This is a good news story of security company finds vulnerability, gets it patched before it gets exploited. And internal emails continue to be revealed as part of the U.S. Federal Trade Commission's appeal of Microsoft's win in its bid to acquire Activision Blizzard. Among those tidbits, Microsoft has unsurprisingly been working on streaming PC games through Xbox Cloud. It only does Xbox games now. Activision executives met last December with Nintendo to discuss the next version of the Nintendo Switch. And there's a lot of stories showing you all the emails about how Microsoft reacted to the PS5 announcement, if you want to see those.
Twitter alternative T2 has renamed itself Pebble. The company is now using the Icelandic top-level domain .is, which lets it change T2 usernames to the format of pebble.is/username. Oh. And it's using a bit of generative AI to help you write posts, offering suggestions based on what you've posted about before, info on your bio, and who to follow.
Pebble is not letting me sign up because every time I tried to create a username, it would redirect me back to login.
Pebble is a real pain.
Was today. In 2020, during lockdowns, Google added support for Zoom and its own Google Meet video conferencing service to the Nest Hub Max smart display. Now it's taken both those away. Support for Google Meet on the Nest Hub Max will end September 28th, and support for Zoom will end on September 30th. Now, in somewhat related news, Apple TV got its new OS today, and Apple TV 4K now supports FaceTime, and later this year will support WebEx and Zoom. So you can stop using your Nest Hub Max and start using an Apple TV if you want. That uses the iPhone or iPad as a camera. And that's
fun.
Yeah, it is fun. That's exactly what it is. All right. It is fair to say that Unity has taken a firestorm of, I'd call it, hate from developers after announcing last Tuesday that it would change how it charges developers to account for each time a game is installed. First, Unity clarified that it would only charge for initial installs. Charities would be exempt and demos wouldn't count. Unity also said subscription services would be required to pay the fee, not developers, in cases of things like Xbox Game Pass. However, the company is now backtracking more. Unity posted on X, "We have heard you. We apologize for the confusion and angst the runtime fee policy we announced on Tuesday caused. We are listening, talking to our team members, community, customers, and partners, and we'll be making changes to the policy. We will share an update in a couple of days. Thank you for your honest and critical feedback."
Now, Engadget captured a representative post about the feelings of developers written by the Falconer dev Tomas Sala on X, quote, "Put years and years of work into my pipeline. I did so under a simple per-seat license. I am happy to pay. Now, while I'm close to release, they spring something new on me. Not a price increase, but a fundamental change in how we do business together. I have no options. I can't go back. I can only bend and pay up." So, Tom, where are we at here?
Yeah. The apology reads at first a little like, "We're sorry you got mad." But it does say they're going to make changes. Doesn't say what those changes are going to be. Sounds like what devs would like is a change back to the per seat policy. And I think at this point they'd understand an increase in that. But obviously what Unity looked at was, we need to make more money, and that's not unusual. I don't think devs are upset at Unity for needing to make up some losses right now in this economy. It's just the way they fundamentally changed the terms of the deal, and it angered people. But Unity seems to think that, or at least thought that, just increasing the per seat license or lowering the qualification or something wasn't enough to make this work. I'm very curious what they come up with later this week, because short of that, short of just going back to the old policy at a higher price, I'm not sure anything they do is going to make developers less angry.
Well, every developer, I mean, every company has one of those apology letters kind of as like a boilerplate when something kind of happens. They literally sound exactly the same from every single, especially the tech companies. So, and it always, you're right. It starts off with like, we're sorry you got mad. Not that we did anything wrong, you know, but we're sorry you got mad. But yeah, I mean, you got developers that are halfway into something and then you're going to change the rules. I can see why people aren't happy.
Yeah, there are two things that I think are really at play here that lead to the reaction that we've seen. Number one, it's not just raising revenue, it's who this revenue is going to disproportionately affect. And it is really at the heart of indie games for which you use the Unity engine disproportionately because it's a good engine. The second part of this is what Chris just mentioned. There is a timeline for putting out something that needs to be at an increasing level of quality or polish in indie games. It's a very saturated market where you have a lot of brilliant people that are putting their heart and soul into these items. And if at a late stage, if not having it already out, all of a sudden the entire calculations that you've done for a business model are flipped up on its head, well, then you're going to have a problem. As for solutions, I think that if you were going to make a change like this, this is a, I mean, I would almost say at least 6 months, if not maybe years of a runway for people to understand that this change is coming.
Yeah. I think that the biggest problem really isn't the change to me. It's the fact that they didn't bring developers on board to it, because the Unity terms up until now have been very generous. When Unity first announced the, like, you can use it for free up to, I think it's 1 million downloads, and then you had to start to pay the per seat license, it was considered to be a big boon. It was very developer friendly, and it's always easy to be generous in the good times. But then when the good times go away, it's always difficult because the good times go away for everybody at the same time. And so you need to do extra work to bring developers along. It feels to me like Unity was a little impatient and was like, well, we need to do this now.
Well, there's two ways that you can do it, right? You can try to include all the stakeholders and let it be a slow motion train wreck, or you hope to rip off the Band-Aid and hope that it's a very loud but fast train wreck. And it turns out they got both.
Way to thread the needle.
Yeah. The CEOs of Unity and Reddit are going to be having some nice drinks together soon. Lots of Apple news today. Morgan Stanley says its research indicates iPhone 15 pre-orders are stronger than expected, though the long lead times are partially attributable to supply constraints. But it's mostly good news. The price of repairing the back glass for the iPhone 15 Pro has gone down. It'll be $169 for the Pro and $199 for the Pro Max. That's quite a bit less than it is for the 14, where it's $499 for the Pro and $549 for the Pro Max. Tim Cook told CBS this morning that he watched an entire season of Ted Lasso on an Apple Vision Pro, and that's what all the headlines of that conversation were about. Apple Vision Pro, of course, the headset coming out next year. Cook says he uses it every day, which I imagine he does because he has to. It's his product.
Yeah, it's kind of his job, right?
Yeah. Exactly. The most relevant news to iPhone users, though, is the release of iOS 17. It is out now. I just finished installing it. It comes with improved autocorrect, virtual call screening, which, yes, Google Pixel users, I know you've had this for years. It is cool. Another thing you've had is interactive home screen widgets. iOS users get that now, too. Standby mode can turn your phone into a smart display. And there's an accessibility feature that can clone your voice. So you could train it on recordings of your voice and provide your voice in case that you have lost your voice. It could be used by anybody, though, and it's being used by the weather app Carrot. If you don't know, Carrot offers you description settings. You can have it give the normal boring weather descriptions, or you can set levels of snarkiness up to one that they're like, you know, basically on the edge of offensive descriptions of the weather. and Carrot, in this new version, will be able to read the weather to you in your own voice.
So So let me get this straight. You could, this app will not only tell you the weather in your own voice, but you could make it a snarkier version of yourself telling you the weather.
I mean, depends on how snarky you are, if it's snarkier. Yeah. But yes, yes, that's the idea. It's called overkill personality. Kara will sometimes make creative use of profanity in her forecasts.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, obviously.
This doesn't sound like a waste of time at all. So.
Yeah, Carrot is a fun app. It actually got me thinking, though, about the idea of voices, because we spent a lot of time talking about the iconic voices of Siri and the Amazon Echo's voice. But it makes me wonder, is the future of us talking to computers us talking to ourselves? And is that going to be less friction or more friction in terms of you processing that you're talking to a computer?
It's a great question. I mean, I just assumed everything was going to sound like Hal, you know, at one point, but you know, we're way beyond that now.
They also do celebrity voices on Carrot, and I feel like that's what more people would opt for, because I don't know that most of us want to hear ourselves. You know, the old cliche is like, oh, I hate the sound of my own voice. Although a lot of people do love the sound of their own voice, so maybe this will be perfect for them. But
yeah, speak for yourself, dork.
I think a lot of people will try this. It's a great press release for Carrot to get people to talk about it. But
and the target demo is probably podcasters.
Yes, no. Exactly. All the 100% of podcasters will use this, but most sane people will actually just switch it to, you know, Julia Roberts or something.
Yeah, right. But why? I mean, I think when people say that they don't like hearing their own voice, it wraps into a lot of things about public speaking and being embarrassed and having people judge you. But this is not that. If you're and I'm imagining a world where my own voice replaces Siri, for example. If that creates less of a friction in my own brain, because it feels like I'm literally just having a conversation with myself in my own head, which I do often, then maybe it makes it more frictionless for me to get more done. And ultimately, that's the goal of all of these systems.
I hadn't thought about the conversation in your own head. I was going with the, like, you don't normally speak to yourself out. I guess people do talk to themselves out loud, but you know, when you want to talk to something else, you want it to sound different to distinguish it from yourself. This is all, when I say these things out loud, they all sound like very psychologically fraught.
Well, they are. And I do think that this is a very, very interesting question, because a lot of those assumptions are made in a world before we had the technology to accurately replicate our own voice. So let's imagine that it's, you know, not only your own voice, but maybe your voice, but calmer. Maybe it's your voice, but more confident. Like all these things that we can do with machine learning, and I'm assuming that's what it's happening on device.
Yeah, it's like 15 minutes of training on the iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't know, folks. I want to hear feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com, one way or the other, whether you like this, hate it, or otherwise. Would you want to do this, whether you're going to do it or not? And if you do it, how it goes for you, we'd like to hear that as well.
It might drive you crazy. You might actually go insane.
Yeah. Our email address.
You're going to be chastised by your own voice. I mean, with the weather. I mean, it's a lot of weird things.
Carrot says, if the word feedback hurts your feelings, boy, do I have some feed forward for you. That's what it says about my weather right now. It has nothing to do with the weather. Anyway, speaking of feedback, that's our email address, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. All right, Chris, let's talk crowdfunding.
Absolutely.
You have crowdfunded many projects. How long have you been crowdfunding projects now?
Oh, probably close to 8 years or so-ish, maybe closer to 10. I lose track because it was, you know, multiple companies and different things that we did. I've done everything from like books to a podcast festival to a documentary feature film. So it's been a lot, and it's definitely seen a lot of change over the years for sure.
How has that changed for you? Because you were mentioning to me that you feel like there has been a sea change in what people assume from the operator side of crowdfunding.
definitely, like, a lot of times, like, the crowdfunding was, like, just to get something made or, like, a proof of concept where I can't really afford to make this. But then when I do it, then I want to go through the old gatekeeper system of, like, trying to get it picked up as a book or, you know, a movie or something like that, whatever you had actually made, comics, whatever, which I've been doing a lot of now is graphic novels. But the what's been happening is a lot more tools are being added where you don't really have to do that anymore, where it's not a means to an end anymore. It is actually an end product where people can just back and buy indie products right from the crowdfunding. And there's more tools available now to create ease for like people running campaigns to get rewards to backers and all of these things. So it becomes more of like a decision, like, well, do I want to deal with the bigger companies at all? Or I have enough tools now because everything has evolved to kind of avoid it completely. And the other component to that is the consumers. Like, you know, crowdfunding, no one knew what that was, you know, a decade ago. But now consumers are getting more savvy. Like, well, I want an indie comic book. I'm going to look on Kickstarter first, or I'm Indiegogo, or if I want to look it for an independent film or something new or different that's not in one of the in the big companies. And a lot of times the companies do pick up the indie books anyway, but it's not like, oh, if I don't get this picked up, we're done. It's not that way anymore. There's an audience there just for indie products, and they're going to go to crowdfunding sites to fulfill them.
So what are some of those tools that you're talking about that have made that easier, where instead of saying, I'll make this movie with the Kickstarter funds and then hope I get a distribution deal, that you can just say like, hey, I'm making this comic book, this movie, and that's it. I'm selling it to my crowd.
Yeah, pretty much. And one of the things is kind of like these little helper companies that have cropped up, like Backer Kit, where, you know, it helps you give away rewards, or there's like shipping companies like that help you kind of get the rewards out and, you know, help you with the postage. But most importantly now, with there's a lot more digital distribution that, like, where you could have a comic book and you could get it on Kindle, you could get it on Drive-Thru Comics, you could get it in all these places, or Global Comics, where it's really tailored more for indie, where the big companies have their stuff on there too, but people go there to browse and see what's different and new that's not on the on the big companies' kind of libraries. Is there some cross-pollination? Yes, and there should be. Like, sometimes big companies do Kickstarters and the other way around, or sometimes I think Neil Gaiman did a Kickstarter for Good Omens, the graphic novel, and it like almost like broke the internet. I mean, it did so well. So you've got indie creators, you've got creators that have been working with studios or publishers for years, and it's all mixed together, which is great because it helps, you know, all of the indie creators too. Like, if somebody's looking at a Neil Gaiman project on Kickstarter, there's upsells and there's ways for them to actually then see the other indie projects of other creators as well. But the tools themselves have evolved to the point where I'd like to see it get a little more streamlined, but it's definitely getting there. Like, you could have Kickstarter with add-ons. Like, so say you missed a book on the last campaign, you can add that on to your reward now, which we couldn't do before. So there's a lot of catching up, like, especially with comic book series. If you want an older issue, you could add that right into your pledge, and then you'll get everything sent to you at once. So things like that have made it a lot easier.
Chris, what would you say is the best cadence for doing Kickstarters for like the same audience? Because that's something that I tend to see happen sometimes, is especially if somebody's using Kickstarter as their primary financial engine, that they tend to launch a lot of campaigns and there seems to be diminishing returns.
It's a mixed bag, really. Like, it depends. Like, if you create three titles and one of them went gangbusters, there's no guarantee that the next two will. Maybe if it's a sequel to that one, but if it's a different one, because, you know, people aren't just going to kind of back to back. They still have to like it. Even if they already like you, they may not back everything that you do. So it's still, there's a lot of other factors as well. Like, what does the audience want? Is there certain things that work better on Kickstarter, work better on Indiegogo or Zoop? Like, they all have kind of like their own little strengths and weaknesses. But I think the main thing is that the consumer's gotten a little more savvy and can kind of search through things a little bit easier, more to get to what they want.
Yeah, it feels like the early buzz of Kickstarter was, oh, here's where I can find the prototypes, right?
Yes.
And what you're describing mm-hmm. is more of Kickstarter as the indie bookstore,
yes.
or the indie record mm-hmm. store. How
yeah,
long right, do you think,
comics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How long do you think mm-hmm. that stays that way?
Well, I'm starting to see, like, that it's kind of like getting more and more prevalent, especially when all of these other digital distribution areas come online. Like I said, like I think there's Global Comics and Drive-Thru Comics. And I mean, the Comixology was great until Amazon bought it and kind of rolled it into Kindle. Now it's even hard to find on the Amazon website for Comixology. So that's another part of the purge that Amazon was going through. What I'm seeing now is also like subscription models. Like you could go onto like a site that has all digital comics, just pay a fee for the month, read as much as you want. So you can literally just kind of browse and read, you know, everywhere, even if you're not even sure what you want. So I think the tools and accessibility have gotten better all the way around. And I see that actually continuing as things get a little more incorporated and streamlined, I think, and the audience gets a little more savvy on where to find things. I think everything will get smoother because there's still a fair amount of hiccups people will be able to find what they want quicker.
Yeah. So the bloom is not off the Kickstarter Indiegogo rose quite yet. It's just
no, not yet.
Yeah.
I think it's more of an evolution, like, you know, what it can do and what it can be used for. And also there's more competition now. It used to be Kickstarter.
Right.
That's it. Now it's not. There's Indiegogo, there's GameFound, and there's all these other crowdfunding sites for different things like comics and board games. And so I think that also helps because it brings awareness. Like, oh, I wasn't aware of Zoop until I checked out Kickstarter because the person that I like their work, they have another one over here. So it's I think it's the old rising tide, you know, raises all ships. So I think it's all good for sure.
Good for the boats. Good for all of us.
Yes, yeah. Good for the boats.
All right, Justin, you've got a story about space.
Of course, Germany's The Exploration Company will not wait for European rockets, but has contracted with the Indian Space Research Organization, ISRO, to use its rockets to launch a reusable space capsule, Nix. The Exploration Company hopes to compete with SpaceX in the market for delivering cargo and people to the International Space Station and NASA's planned Lunar Orbit Space Station.
Yeah, what I love about this story is there are so many aspects that show how complex the space market is becoming, because you've got an open market competitor for SpaceX in the Exploration Company and Nix, which is good. We want to have options to choose from. That's good for SpaceX as well as everybody else, but also competition from government-run organizations. It's Indian Space Research Organization is interesting in that it has its own private for-profit subsidiary that it runs, and that's who the Exploration Company is working with. It's the what is it called? The New Space India Limited Launch Services. So just so many different parts of space becoming normal, just be looking like a normal business landscape.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about this moon casino we've been hearing about for years? Who's building that?
Well, we got to land on the moon again first.
Yeah.
Then we all right, have so to a couple years off still.
Then we have to be able to get the slot machines up there, which is the whole... They're hoping find slot machine resources at the polar ice caps on the moon.
They have settled on the tagline, hitting your eye like a big pizza pie.
Nice.
All right, let's check out the mailbag. On Good Day Internet last week, we were talking about how quick and efficient Amazon is for delivery. Jim would like to point out that it isn't that way for everyone. Jim writes, getting something within 2 days, if not sooner, I'm sure is normal for some people, but I don't see it here in mid-coast Maine. We are about halfway between Portland and Bar Harbor, and when I order from them, it's a week, if I'm lucky. I might order something on Monday and get it Friday. Walmart's W Plus is faster for me, but not by much. And I would say that our producer Amos, who lives in Alaska, probably seconds these emotions that not everywhere gets everything faster. Sarah Lane was talking to a friend of hers in Maine who said, Jim must be on an island, because it's not that, you know, between Portland and Bar Harbor is hard for Amazon to get to unless you're off the coast. Then once you have to start putting stuff on boats to get it to the islands out there, it becomes more complicated.
Yeah, more jet skis.
Yeah, so the further north, the harder it gets until you like hit the North Pole, pretty much.
Yeah, so, North Pole delivery time is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're the worst. Well, thanks to you both for being with us. Justin Robert Young, what do you got going on these days that involves me?
Well, Tom, you know, we got a little, I've been plugging this podcast for a few appearances now, but you were off gallivanting in Korea. But we are here to let everybody know that Know a Little More has entered into its new season. And I got to tell you, it is can't miss. It's all about the mother of all demos and the technology that set into motion our past and present and possibly future of computing. Go ahead and get it right now. Know a Little More on the podcast player of your choice.
Yeah, and if you want it commercial free, you can get it directly patreon.com/knowalittlemore. This is the most fun I've had on a season of Know a Little More yet. They just keep getting more fun every time. And the mother of all demos is fascinating. I knew a little bit about it going into this season, and I've just been amazed at how deep it goes and how many connections it shows. And this episode that just came out last week about hypertext wasn't even supposed to be part of this season, but it just, it just materialized like, oh, it is also related. So I hope y'all are enjoying this season as much as we are making it for you. Chris Mancini, what do you got going on?
Speaking of crowdfunding, I have a new Kickstarter that launched literally today. So Long Ago and Far Away 2. It's the sequel to Long Ago and Far Away that I know you got a while back, Tom. And it's kind of like a Game of Thrones meets Clerks and Narnia, where instead of British school children going through the wardrobe, it's snarky asshole 30-year-olds, so they kind of start making things worse while they're there. And the sequel is what happens when somebody, you know, had an adventure with the witch queen and now has a son, and that son is now, because the time is different, is 20 years older than him, and he shows up in a Comic-Con to try to kill him in a hotel room.
Nice.
Because he's mad at being abandoned. And so it's got, you know, it's really fun. I always love doing comedy and fantasy kind of together. So it's swords, sorcery, dragons, zombies, necromancers, and poor parenting all together in the graphic
all
novel.
All the classics. So,
yes. So you can just go to Kickstarter.com and look up Long Ago and Far Away 2, or you could just go to my website, whitecatentertainment.com, and click through there. To we've got 30-some days left, but don't wait. It starts today, and there are some early bird rewards. So the sooner, because everything runs on the algorithm, the sooner you back, the better, and then it, you know, pushes everything forward.
Yeah, help Chris out, especially if you've done Long Ago and Far Away before, but even if it's new to you, come on. How can you resist that?
Yeah, go give it a roll.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's catch-up tiers, too. You could get the old book with the new one, too,
if
you want.
Oh, you were just talking about that feature. That's great. So you could, you could get in on the whole thing right now. Fantastic.
Yes.
Long Ago and Far Away 2. Patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. As Justin alluded to moments ago, I have been in South Korea for a couple of weeks. So we're going to talk about my trip there and some of the technology I observed, my experiences with using tech while traveling. So stick around for that. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more about that at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow with Charlotte Henry talking about the UK's new free streaming TV service called Freely. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Oh, man. That your pitch gets better every time for Long Ago and Far Away, Chris.
Oh, good.
That was good. That was compelling.
Good.
I wonder what kind of IP Freely is working with.
I nice. See what you did. All of it, apparently. Yeah.
I'm coming back tomorrow.
just for that, right?
Just for that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So the thing I've talked about most, I talked about this on my newsletter, I talked about it on the editor's desk for the patrons this week, was the eSIMs that I used traveling, which just made data in another country simple. Like, you don't even have to go to a desk to get an eSIM. I did because I wanted to get a local phone number. And in Korea, like many countries, you have to register with a passport. So I had to show a passport to do that. But if I hadn't wanted to get the local number, I could have gotten an unlimited data eSIM in Korea. And all I would have needed was a website and a QR code. And I could have done it myself.
Yeah. In traveling internationally lately, Ashley and I have just gone through AT&T just has a program that it's a little bit extra for the month, but you essentially get all you can eat data. We've just, you know,
for text and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And internet, mm-hmm. like, which is really all you mm-hmm. want. In the past, we've gotten hotspots and stuff, but the last few times it's just been shockingly easy.
Is it slowed down though?
Now, that's something I don't know, because sometimes we have been in places, you know, if you're in Berlin, then you can expect that there's pretty good coverage, but you're not sure. And also don't know exactly who you're working with based on who AT&T's partners are. And then when you're in the remote environs of Sicily, then you're screwed. There's just no service at all. Anyway.
Well, that's doesn't matter who.
I remember, too. I remember when I went overseas and we were shooting the documentary, I had to call AT&T and let them know and to get on that plan and stuff. And then because they said otherwise, well, if you don't just call us and let us know and get on this plan, it's like $1 a text or something ridiculous that they were kind of hoping that they wouldn't do. So, but it seems like it's much easier now.
And if I remember correctly, you only really have to call once. You have to just let them know. Mm-hmm. Hey, I travel abroad, and they're like, oh, okay, we'll put you on the, if you log on to another abroad network, then it's the fair price and not the whoopsie doodle here, give us $100,000 price.
T-Mobile is what I use. And in the past, that's what I've used for my data when traveling, which was a big improvement over the previous system of what you're talking about, where you have to pay extra for anything. But what I found with T-Mobile when traveling in Japan was they had good coverage, but what they do is they only give you 5 gigabytes of fast service. And then they don't take away your service. They just put you down to the lower tier and it becomes really hard to use your data. So what we would do is we would use the free stuff as long as it would go. And you didn't have to tell T-Mobile about it. They just automatically, they actually send you a notification as soon as you land. Welcome to South Korea. You're on the roaming plan. You know, good for you. Here's what you want to do if you want to make sure you keep getting the fast service. And so we would go in and we would be like, okay, I think I need five more gigabytes. I guess I'll buy that, which wasn't bad. But what we did with this trip is we kept our T-Mobile service active on the phone because we have dual eSIMs. And then we bought unlimited 5G data from a local carrier. We went with LG U+ because they were very well reviewed with their coverage, which I found to be true. And that let us have both active. You could tell the phone, do all your data through LG first. And if it doesn't have coverage there, then you can fail over to T-Mobile, which meant we never ran through our T-Mobile allowance. We were always had a backstop and it never cost us extra money. The LG U+ unlimited SIM that we went with was 55,000 won, which is about $50 basically for 2 weeks for 15 days. And we never had to think about it. That was the best part. We never once thought about our data ever again. We always had good data. There were a couple places where you had that typical situation of we're in a weird building that doesn't have a thing, but we'd get on Wi-Fi there, right?
And
that happens anywhere you are with any phone. But mostly it was amazing. And not only that, but we were able to have 2 phone numbers. So we could continue to get texts from our friends at home and send texts to our friends at home using the T-Mobile number. But we also had a South Korean number, which came in handy when restaurants were like, just put in your phone number to join the wait list. No international numbers allowed. We'd put in that Korean phone number and then get the text and be able to get into the restaurant. So it was handy. It was handy to use it that way.
Do you have to do something like to your phone, like jailbreak it or something to be able to, you know, switch eSIMs? Or is that just like an Apple thing?
If it depends on how you got your phone. If your phone is locked, so if you bought it probably through the carrier, if you bought it through the carrier, it might be locked. Then you would either have to get it unlocked or you just can't do it. But if your phone is unlocked, then you're fine. It's super easy. And like I said, if I didn't want the Korean phone number, the local phone number, I could have just done it myself with a, I would have signed up on a website. They would have sent me an email address with a QR code. I would have tapped on the code and said, scan that. And I would have had the eSIM.
I know one of the things that you were doing with that voluminous data was posting a lot to Instagram. And there was a series of pictures that you had that got me and Sarah talking the last time that I was on here. The concept of selfie studios.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me, because we were not able to come to a consensus on exactly what we would imagine a selfie studio to be. So you are now here. You're the authority. Uh-huh. What's up?
Chris, do you know about the selfie studio phenomenon?
I do not, but I'm very curious to hear.
They exist in the U.S., but they're not nearly as ubiquitous as they are in South Korea. I posted a series of ones just from Busan, but they were all over Seoul as well, especially in touristy or clubby areas. So a place where tourists would be wandering around looking for something to do or record their memories, or drunk people coming out of clubs with their friends, like, let's all take a picture together. And they're everywhere. Like, there'll be like three or four on a block all next to each other. They have different themes, but the general idea is that you go in, there's a section of like props that you can choose from. You've probably seen this at weddings in the US a lot.
Sure. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's same idea of like, you know, the funny headgear and the sunglasses and the, you know, magic wand and the money ears and all that. You grab your
stuff.
When
you're on the boardwalk.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get the old West photos and stuff. Yeah.
Depending on how big the place is, three or four booths. There'll be a light indicating whether there's someone in that booth or not, and usually there's not. So you just walk into an empty booth, and you tap your credit card or your phone to say, okay, I want to buy selfies. And then there's a touch screen where you can pick what you want those selfies to be. So again, these places have different themes. Some are music oriented, some are like fantasy oriented or anime oriented or whatever. And so different ones will have different options, and some are just straight ahead. We did one that was called Look Up in Itaewon, where the novelty was that the camera was above you. And so it had you're in an elevator that's crashing kind of feel to it.
So this is more photo booth, like photo booth plus, like you are standing and a little bit more active.
And usually what they do is they'll take like 12 photos. They do the countdowns and stuff. And then you get to choose four of them. And there's usually like different options of like, oh, do you want four side by side? Do you want the classic photo strip? Do you want postcard? Just one? What do you want? And then you choose, you know, you can choose from the photos you took, and then they print them out and you're done.
So that's interesting. And I don't know if either Sarah or I got it down to that. I think that the phrase selfie in our culture, meaning so much you taking your own picture with your own phone kind of through.
Yeah. This was not that. This was not selfie in any of the ones I went to. Now I didn't go into all of them. Maybe there's some where you use your own phone somehow, but none of the ones
where you just get the little shed and the props, and then take your own pictures.
Because I have 10 seen minutes. That in the U.S. where they're like, this is just a place where we have cool sets, and you pay to rent that set, and you take your own photos. I think that also exists, but that's not the ones I went into.
Well, that would be more along the lines of what we refer to as like an Instagram museum, like the museum of ice cream, or there's actually, where did I go? Where would we go to this one? Oh, it was in Amsterdam. But there was like a whole chain of these Instagram museums where you're, you know, it, like you take a seat and it looks like the whole room is upside down. And it's just fun stuff that gets engagement online.
There is that too. But the little photo booth studios are the ones that are everywhere.
So that's fascinating. And how much, what is it a pop in American dollars?
I'm trying to remember. I think like one strip of like, you know, the classic four photos was something like 3,000 to 5,000 won, which is a few bucks, $3 to $5, let's say.
So they're doing reasonable. This stuff at a high volume.
Oh, it's
moving people in and out. Yeah.
And they're unattended. I mean, there's CCTV, so somebody's monitoring the place. Also, South Korea is insanely safe. Like they just don't have a lot of the problems that other parts of the world have. So you just walk
in. A lot of drama, though.
Yes, there is. But you could just walk in and do it all yourself. There's no one else in there. There's a button to push if you need help, but we never needed it. Everything worked. There was also a purse store that had no people.
What help would you have needed in a selfie studio?
I mean, only if the software glitched.
If your card wouldn't work.
You have a different color boa.
Can you make me look pretty? Because this isn't.
Yeah.
Can you fix my chin?
Yeah, I got something with my nose. Can you? But no, there was also a purse store that Eileen bought a purse at where there were no people in the store.
How'd she pay?
Wow.
You go to a little kiosk in the corner, you scan the purse, it tells you how much it is, you pay, and you leave.
See, you think there's no one there, and then the pile of purses in the corner just rises up.
You didn't pay.
Yeah, exactly. Like the most fashionable ghillie suit.
I'm Percy.
This curse will follow you to the States.
Are any other big tech things that exist over there that you'd like to see on our shores of waving amber grain?
I don't know that there was anything in particular. You talk about Instagrammable places. The cafe scene there is ridiculous. Every cafe is an Instagram museum of its own, like just with art and beautiful settings for you to take a picture of your pastry in. There's one called the Salt Pond that literally had a salt pond in the middle of the cafe so that you could have a nice backdrop. There's one that had like a huge art installation in the front that you could, you know, stand in front of. There was a donut shop. I took a picture of that one where the donuts are presented on like a platter. So they're like the most gorgeous donut photo that you could ever get possible. That's not really technology though. Our hotel room, the last hotel, we stayed in three hotels, and the last hotel had the voice activation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was Genie, not any of the other ones that we know.
Yeah.
It was useless. It was so Eileen kept using it to turn on the TV, I think, simply to hear it say, "To be is on." Because it always said it like in a French accent. To be is on.
Genie.
Genie. Hey, Genie, turn on the TV. And 50% of the time it did not understand you. It went off multiple times when we weren't talking to it. It was.
Yes.
It was not.
It doesn't understand your complicated and exotic Midwestern accent.
Possibly.
Your corn chips will be delivered in 20 minutes.
But I didn't.
That's not what I said. No, I just. Just turn on the TV.
That will be 20,000 watt.
Yes.
All right, Tom, I have a couple questions.
Amos popped in. A wild Amos arrived. We were just mentioning you earlier. Amos, what's up, man? Amos used to live in Korea, so I'm sure you've got good insight.
I have questions. In your hotel rooms, did you have to put your hotel key into a little tray to turn the lights on?
No. I didn't have to do that anymore. That's a European thing too. And you used to have to do that. The last time I was in Korea was 2016 and you had to do that. They still have the master switch so that you could turn off all the power in the room. But yeah, you didn't have to, store the hotel key in there. Not in the ones I stayed at anyway. Yeah,
that was always annoying for us. If you had, you know, we'd have a party room or whatever, where, you know, several of us were staying in one room and one person would leave cause they wanted to go out and smoke or whatever else. And they'd have to take the key with them cause we were all too drunk.
Leave, turn the power off.
All the lights, TV, everything else just cut off. Like, oh, come on.
That was new. They don't do that anymore.
Before you left, I asked if you went to Itaewon, if you'd stop by the Yongsan Station to check out the electronics mall in the Yongsan Station.
Yeah, I didn't get there.
Turn back.
Yeah.
You gotta go back now.
Yeah, we actually got close to that. We took a bus that day. And I was like, okay, we need to get over there. And that was the first day. And we're like, oh, we have plenty of time. And then we never went back.
The Yongsan Station in Itaewon is a very large multi-train station, you know, for the subways. And one side is just the train station. The other side is a 7-floor electronics and home, like, shopping area mall. And if you ever thought you'd been to an electronics mall in America, you have not seen the Yongsan Station Mall. It is insane.
You know, that is something that even in the places in America that have gigantic public transit, and I'm thinking of like Penn Station, like America doesn't really keep up or want to make showpieces out of those places. Like Penn Station is kind of a dump, and it's always sort of been a dump.
Grand Central is the closest we have in that it has restaurants in the station that aren't horrible.
That aren't a Sbarro is actually run by rats. Where was this? This has to be Berlin. Last time we were there, it was 4 floors, and you would not have to do a lot to dress it up to be a Blade Runner style or what's the Amazon series, the space series?
The Expanse.
The Expanse. Like an Expanse style belter area. It just has all these little nooks and crannies. It's very industrial, like all metal and glass and stuff like that. But it looked awesome. And then you're like, wow, I've never seen a train station that looked this cool in America. We just, trains are a thing to be tolerated here.
The one thing I will say I missed technology wise in train stations in particular was escalators.
What?
They do not have a consistent application of escalators in Korean subway stations. I think because hiking is like the national pastime. They're like, yeah, we love stairs. There were so many times where we're like, really? We have to climb stairs? Like even with baggage coming out of Seoul Station and stuff.
I would also say that there are some stations like, Yongsan comes to mind, but where you, I don't know that they would be able to have escalators for all the stairways that they have going the different directions and the multi-layers, because if you want to go from one train
and they
to
do
another,
have elevators if you're worried about accessibility, like there are elevators and stuff, you can get out without using the stairs, but
there's sometimes where you're going up a flight of stairs and there's a flight of stairs crossing directly in front of you as you're going. There's some
an Escher painting.
There were a few times where we went up the stairs and we kept going up the stairs, like just, endlessly. We got really good at researching which exit from the station had the escalator. Myeongdong Station, exit 7. Exit 5 was closer to our hotel, but we went up exit 7.
So, Tom, the other thing that I was shocked by when we were texting yesterday was no concerts and no baseball.
I know.
I was blown away the baseball because I know whenever you're out in Asia, you have often caught games. But I don't think at that point you were quite as, at least outwardly, obsessed with K-pop in the way that you and Eileen are now. Assuming, catch some of these up and coming acts.
In both cases, it was a little bit schedule.
Isn't that one of the things that keeps crime down in South Korea? Is the K-pop?
Is that what it is? I didn't know. Because everyone's obsessed. So
it's really safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
K-pop. They don't have time to steal anything.
Right. Yeah. Right. They're too busy keeping up on the vlogs from their idols. possibly. I'm not going to say that isn't true. But yeah, the KBO was in the last week, and there were like a couple of games at times when we were traveling because we took a train to Busan. No zombies. And
not yet.
not on ours anyway.
Yeah.
and the concerts that we would have wanted to see were not in the country. They were all touring outside. So it's kind of bad timing for that. We made it up by eating pastries. We ate as much of Korea as we could.
That's something that was for sure. Because following your Instagram, I don't think I saw you or Eileen's face once, but I saw every meal you ate.
Yeah. There was one day where we were, I think it was when we went to Ikseondong, where we wanted to hit like 17 cafes. I'm not lying. Like that's how many we had on the map. And we're like, all right, we're not going to hit all 17, obviously, but let's see how many we make. And we made 4. Like,
wow. That's still impressive.
And the donut only happened because I insisted. Eileen was like, I'll just have some of yours. I think I'm good. There was
were you saying original 17 cafes in a row, or were you going
like
to try
in
and do
a,
it over
in a little neighborhood?
Days?
We had marked 17 cafes that were worth visiting. Like,
and you were going to go to all of them one after another?
We were like, we're going to go to as many of these as possible. Yeah.
Okay. And you got 4 of them, but they were all delicious, I'm guessing.
They were. There was not a loser among them.
Aren't the donuts like a big thing there too? Like with the street food and everything?
Then that's a whole separate thing, right? The whole street food scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's all kinds of great baked goods in the train stations, from the street vendors. And that's when you also get the Oreo churros are a big thing there.
What?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are these guys going to think of next?
I don't know, man. It's too
they
delicious.
Had me a chicken on a stick. And when you're
everything
traveling,
on a stick. What yeah, if from, you can imagine eating it? It's available on a stick there.
From the bar or the club back to your hotel, you can find it on a stick on the way for like $3, and you're munching on something. It may or may not be what they advertise, but it's delicious.
But it's great. It's on. Yeah.
Well, because what they call a hot dog, we would call a corn dog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And you can get a better
their
like
stock hot
cheese.
Dog is a corn dog.
Yeah.
You just want a hot dog.
The word
what do they call a chili dog?
Chili hot
like
dog.
Like a chili dog. What would that
I don't
be?
Know. I don't
chili
know.
Hot dog. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I found out like, well, what would you call what we call a hot dog? And I think they call that like a sausage. Mm-hmm.
Like a sausage roll, that makes sense.
But the Korean word for corn dog is hot dog.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, as always, I think that you guys knocked it out of the park, at least according to the pictures.
Well, yeah. And, I guess the other technology things I would add is Naver Maps. If you're going to Korea, use Naver. Google will be helpful in English language searches and stuff. Naver is in Korean, but it has translations, but the translations are not always great. So Google's a good cross-reference, but Naver works, especially for train station stuff and pedestrian mapping and everything. Naver is the one to use. And then Papago was the translation app I was using. I've learned enough Korean to get around, but I was like kind of making sure, like, is that the right way to say that in Papago? And then for signs, for things that were like, you know, long signs, I would use Google Translate with the camera, and that worked great.
That was really, really shocking how good that was. How much did folks in South Korea let you speak Korean to them, even in the capacity that you had? Because that was something that Ashley noticed, is that English, American accented English, is something that people like to interact with. So if you're trying to speak the native language, they'll just be like, no, I'm not wasting you as an opportunity for me to practice my foreign language.
You know, I felt like it was more like, oh, cool, you practice your Korean, I'm going to practice my English.
So you would go back and forth.
So I would speak in Korean, they'd answer me in English, but it wasn't the French thing where they're like, you idiot, just speak English.
No,
it was
no,
very
no.
much a like, oh, cool. Yeah, no, let's do it that way.
No, this was in Germany, and Ashley's been learning German for a couple of years now. And for her, it was a little frustrating because she was so excited to speak German. And as soon as they just heard that corn fed American accent, they were just like, oh, what's up, friend?
And she was yeah, like, oh, no.
Snap.
Yeah.
Anyway, oat milk latte.
I the quintessential experience there was we went to an immersive. Oh, this is a technology thing, actually. There was an immersive museum experience for the Netflix show Alchemy of Souls. It was like three stories, all kinds of virtual light displays, you know, very, very cool. And at the very end, when we came out in the gift shop, we were talking to the woman who was running the counter there, and she asked us where we were from. And so I started speaking to her in Korean, and she was talking back in English, and it was fun. It was a very, like, you could tell she's like, oh, I'm getting to practice my English. And she understood enough of my Korean. So it was good practice.
Well, that sounds delightful. Have you decided where the next vacation is going to be?
No.
North Korea.
I've technically set foot in North Korea.
Yeah.
Because when you go on the DMZ tour, they take you to those blue huts that are on the border.
Yeah.
And when you're in the hut, you can walk to the other side of the hut and you're technically on the North Korea.
In North Korea.
Oh, wow.
If they let you in the hut, then that depends on the relations at the on that
particular. Yeah, yeah. You got to be able to get in the hut for that. Like, to
work. I didn't get to go in the hut.
we lucked out. And Kim Jong-un was not mad tunnel. That day.
I did cross into North Korea in the tunnel, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a kilometer cool. underground.
The tunnel you made to dig to North Korea?
to come out.
The South Koreans had found.
Yeah, yeah. No, I saw that tunnel, too.
I would love to go to, I mean, obviously, like, political ramifications aside. I would very much enjoy going to North.
If I could guarantee that they wouldn't keep me, I would
yes,
be
exactly.
curious to yes. to see what goes on there.
Yeah, yeah. Tom's tech takes on North Korea.
Well, there's that. And then there's also, you know, that they still have an American warship. It's like one of the few American warships that have just been like straight out captured.
Huh.
And is held in North Korea, but it's one of the biggest.
Yeah, not giving it back.
It's one of the biggest propaganda tools when they talk about how they are so mighty they can defeat the United States. Right. They're like, well, hey, if they were so big and bad, why do we cut their warship?
Yeah, from 50 years ago. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a little bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. The USS Pueblo.
Yeah, and you know, instead of lunch, you can tour it. You know, that's
yeah. I would love to see it.
And also, there are areas in the DMZ that the only difference between South Korea and North Korea is a small walking bridge with a fence in front of it with tons of signs of people that have missed their families from the other side. But, you know, you get this idea that the DMZ is multi-kilometers wide and it's forever. And there are areas where it's just a walking bridge. It's 50 feet right there. It's right there.
Yeah. Freaking deer go back and forth without any passports.
Oh, somebody straighten them out.
All right. Let's wrap this up today by thanking our patrons, patreon.com/DTNS. We haven't had a new one that we noticed. There's been some weirdness with our Patreon report stuff. But thank you all for sticking with us and being our patrons, patreon.com/DTNS. Also, thanks to the folks who support us on Twitch, including PC and Milesy, Zoe Brings Bacon, and Rabbit41. Thank you, Chris Mancini, for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here. Always a fun time.
And if you want more of me and Chris talking, watch Cord Killers, because Chris is going to be on Cord Killers today as well.
Yep.
We're going to get lunch and come right back to the microphone.
Indeed. Me too. Thanks, everybody. We will be back tomorrow once again with Charlotte Henry. Until then, have a good day.
See ya.